Hey, back to the king and queen. Just to tie this into last week, Ann asked me, remember the basic opposites were masculine and feminine. We had lion, we had dog, we had sun, we had moon. Here we just have king and queen. And they're all different aspects of the same pair of colliding factors. Here we're stressing the value system dimension of that. Let's see. I just found a nice quote Jung has in paragraph 381 for this bit about going back to... you okay? Disillusion is the prerequisite for redemption.
Say that again?
Disillusion is the prerequisite for redemption.
Disillusion is the
prerequisite for redemption. So disillusion will be the despair, the loss of orientation, the confusion, and that's what you have to go through to get to the new condition. Not a pleasant thought, but a true thought.
And people just don't want to do that.
And this is why analysis is so unpopular. See, if you can become a new person with seven new habits, why bother with this stuff? But all that seven new habits do is keep you better at your old value system.
What did you
Yeah, I was being sarcastic. This whole self-help thing about, you know, pick yourself up and get yourself going again is fine, but all that does is keep the old values working. It helps you stay afloat with the old values. And I think the only way to have a fundamental shift is to be dissolved, which is miserable.
And that's why we fight so hard against it.
And that's why we fight so hard against it. But, as we were saying, I think once you've been through it one time, it's not as scary.
Well, I don't know about that.
It's like, oh shit, not again.
You said once you go through it, perhaps then it's not as difficult to experience.
Second time around. I think people find it's not as scary.
It's still difficult.
Not as scary. Well, you know that the night precedes the dawn.
You go from that depression to despair.
Yeah, but you know your despair has been answered before. And so you can hang on. Maybe it's the hope factor.
Or maybe the first time is more of the despair.
Something is going to... Yeah, I've been here before and I survived and I was better for it.
But the first time, you don't know.
You don't know.
Yeah, because that's where you have the depression rather than the despair. It's when you don't know.
Maybe it's both at that point.
Yeah. Or what they say with the Saturn transit, first you're afraid you're going to die, and then you're afraid you won't. And that's that first 28-30 passage. So, you know, and getting through, and it's like, okay, I didn't die, and I did survive. And
good, thanks. Okay, let's see. 'Twas wonderful to see with what a grace this natural union made at one embrace. Did look, and by a bond both sexes knit, like to a hill and air surrounding it. So he's going back to his mother now, you see. That's the union. The mother unto her chaste chamber goes, where in a bed of honor she bestows her wearied self twixt sheets as white as snow, and there makes signs of her approaching woe. Rank poison issuing from the dying man made her pure orient face look foul and wan. When she commands all strangers to be gone, seals up her chamber door, and lies alone. Meanwhile, she of the peacock's flesh did eat, and drank Green's lion's blood with that fine meat, which Mercury, bearing the dart of passion, brought in a golden cup of Babylon. Her skin in diverse colors did appear, now black, then green, anon 'twas red and clear. That I wanted to look at the... I didn't realize that may not be big enough to see either. Can you see that? It's a peacock in there. You can't see that? Okay. That's a, believe it or not, that's a very frequent image in dreams. One of these things, think peacocks. Who sees peacocks? But it actually does show up. Or a sunrise with, you know, the brilliance of the different colors. What couple of things that Jung talks about as an interpretation there. One is the peacock, which I'll talk about in a second because I've typed it up. The other is notice the king has disappeared. The story turns to the mother, so that is the loss of orientation. The other image here is that it's an incestuous union, which is one big place where Jung could not agree with Freud, that all dreams of incest meant incest, because the incest image shows up very frequently when it's a question of the king falling back into the unconscious for a renewal. That is shown up in dreams as incest, because probably it seems so antithetical to common sense that the unconscious throws up the image of incest, because it's parallel with our disgust at being disempowered and having to wait for guidance from inside. So it gives Jung and Jungians a whole new take on this incest imagery. It is not always negative. Can be very positive, meaning a union that doesn't seem like it should occur. Union of the old value system with the generative capacity of the unconscious.
Well, part of that is, I think, is because we've lost the image of the feminine god. If we still had an image of the feminine god, that is falling back into the mother would be seen as a falling back into divinity,
yep,
rather than the personal mother.
Yep, I agree. Well, but we're all patriarchs.
So is it saying that then he drinks the green lion blood with the peacock blood?
Yeah, let me read you. That's just coming up.
Okay.
Psychologically, this would refer to the intense internal direction of the libido during a major psychic gestation. The peacock is an allusion to the cauda pavonis, the peacock's tail. That's a term the alchemists use quite a bit. Immediately before the albedo or rebedo, all colors appear as if the peacock were spreading his shimmering fan. Now, I included this because I want to give you a sense how the alchemists were describing a physical change in the material, but Jung took it as equally valid as a metaphor for the psychological change inside. The basis for this phenomenon may be the iridescent skin that often forms on the surface of molten metal, for example, lead. Don't know if you ever heated up lead in chemistry class, and you literally can see the rainbow reflecting in it because of the way the heat and the shimmering metal refract the light. The colors, all unite in the albedo. Eating the peacock's flesh is therefore equivalent to integrating the many colors, or psychologically, the contradictory feeling values into a single color, white. So the text is talking about the colors on a metal. Jung sees that as relevant to the psychological part of the transformation, meaning that all the colors of the peacock's tail would be all the difficult emotions you have to go through in toto to get through this process. So even though the ego is disempowered from its ability to change the situation, and you're disoriented and you're waiting for your dreams to put you back together, you still have a very important job of feeling everything that's going on during this process, so that it's not just a mental change, but a change of your entire personality. And in the alchemical language, that multicolor eventually, in their mind, will turn into a white color. Probably the heated metal would go from a heat temperature where you see all the colors in the metal to where it's white hot. As a metaphor for the psychological process, it would be going through all those emotions until clarity emerges out of it. Not trying to get clarity before you've gone through all the emotions. That might be another characteristic of the difference between despair and depression. I think in depression you don't feel emotions. in despair, you are bombarded with emotions. There was a phrase we were, I think it was in the vision seminar where Jung talked about the machine gun fire of emotions. It's so accurate. When you just feel assaulted with hate 1 minute, love 1 minute, lust 1 minute, disgust 1 minute, longing 1 minute, and it just, you just have to endure that condition.
On that, the single color white,
yes.
And then you were talking about it as clarity.
Right.
Is it then a way of seeing, instead of, I'm just a little confused, I kind of think I understand from what, it's like going from the colors to the clarity, the understanding, instead of...
But it's an understanding that's not just mental, but you feel it in your whole being. And it is not an understanding where the thoughts say one thing and the feelings say another, but the thoughts and feelings work together. Mm-hmm. Remember in the woman's dream of the guys who were laughing. See, part of her is laughing, and part of her is upset. That's the split. But this, and they would be two of the colors. But to stay with that, there's a hawk. To stay with that complexity of emotions until you have a single emotion where your feelings and your, sorry, a single understanding where your emotions and your thoughts are working together.
In Myers-Briggs, that's the development of the feeling function, because it's the feeling function that organizes the emotions.
Yeah.
And until the thinking function cannot organize the emotions, they just fly everywhere. And so only when, and so that's why you're bombarded by
yeah.
them. And as the feeling function, which is a rational decision-making function based on personal values, as that develops, you can then begin to organize those things and have a conscious awareness of what that information, because emotions are just information. And it's the feeling function that is then able to connect those to your outer world and your ego, in which you then can organize them and do something with them. But if your
yeah.
feeling function...
That's a good way to put it. It's really, it's the
yes.
you could say the birth of feeling, in Jungian sense, where your understanding and your emotions are coordinated.
Yes. And it's personal, and it happens down in the body.
Yeah. Just how many times have you heard people say something and you say, your feelings don't match it?
Mm-hmm.
Are we also, the things you're talking about right now are also making me thinking of synchronicity, about not so much just the dream, but also what else is happening in real life.
Well, we're getting there. The last thing we'll do today is how this all bears on synchronicity. Because, in fact, it's one blob. We're breaking it up into different parts for the sake of didactic presentation. Definitely, synchronicity is in here. That will be where we end today. Okay, you all right so far? The lion, now, the lion expresses the passionate emotionality that precedes the recognition of unconscious contents. So before you get an insight, you are usually on fire with some emotion in that process. The animal form emphasizes that the king is overpowered or overlaid by his animal side, and consequently expresses himself only in animal reactions, which are emotions. Emotionality in the sense of uncontrollable affects is essentially bestial. I think that's enough there. Let me skip down. The blood of the green lion, drunk by the queen, is handed to her in a golden cup of Babylon. This refers to the great whore in Revelation 17:1, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. Now in Revelations, she is presented as holding the sins of the world. But what we can make of that psychologically is that it's in a golden cup. Isn't that interesting that the Bible portrays itself and presents that in the most valuable container? And that then is what is used to describe this phase of the emotions. They are often humiliating, denigrating, overpowering emotions, which, though seeming anywhere from uncomfortable to immoral to outrageous, are of the highest value. That's the...
Contain it,
see that it's sealed up. And
therapy would do that. Being in therapy would have to see, create a container for the person's container.
And you gotta see, can the person stand that container? Or do they go around town labbing,
acting it out?
Right. See, there is where the previous reductive work is important, to create an ego strong enough to do that.
Ego structure, we call that. You have to have a strong ego.
Same for Jung, no different. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Especially to the patriarchy, which doesn't allow a space for emotion. That's got shoved out.
Right. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Thrice 50 nights she lay in grievous plight, as many days and mornings sate upright. The king revived was in 30 more. His birth was fragrant as the primrose flower. Her time being come, the child conceived before issues reborn out of her womb once more, and thereupon resumes a kingly state. Possessing fully heaven's propitious fate, the mother's bed, which erstwhile was a square, is shortly made opicular, and everywhere the cover likewise round with Luna's luster brightly did abound. So there's the rebirth of the value system. What Jung makes of the sweet smell is that it's the smell of the Holy Spirit. And that this shift from death to birth, rebirth of the value system, is essentially a miracle. That's why the book is called Mysterious Union. We don't know how that happens. Those of you who did the dream analysis seminar will remember we had that. It was a case where Jung was working with a couple where they were estranged sexually and emotionally. And he worked and worked and worked. And one day, they started sleeping together again. And Jung was asked, how did that happen? He said, I don't know. That change is something the ego doesn't do but receives. And the despair is the preparation for the receptivity to receive that shift. I think that is so crucial in Jungian psychology. We don't make the change. We entertain the state of mind that it takes to receive the change. That is the difference between ego and self. A self ego does it. A self exists in a reciprocity between doing and receiving.
You call it a miracle.
Would
you call it grace?
Yes, grace, definitely. He uses that word. See, I think I brought along some quotes of his. An ecclesiastical, this is paragraph 432 in Mysterium, an ecclesiastical allegory in the lives of saints, a sweet smell is one of the manifestations of the Holy Ghost. Although the alchemists regarded the art as a charisma, a gift of the Holy Spirit, or of Sapientia Dei, it was still man's work, and even though a divine miracle was a decisive factor, the mysterious phileus was still concocted artificially in a retort. So it's a balance between human effort and grace. Human effort has to, which is going back to my beginning statement, what do we have to do to turn the unconscious positive? Well, we have to face the opposites, we have to let ourselves be dissolved, we have to endure the emotions, we have to live through the despair to be in the place where the new thing can come in. That is grace, but without our effort, the grace would not have occurred. And Jung is working with this balance between effort and grace.
There's like an activity and there's rest, so there's a kind of surrender and rest, you know,
yes.
Surrender to whatever. before.
Yep. Definitely. Key. I think this is where Jung is different than anyone else, as far as I know. That grace is really placed at the center of the process, as is human effort. The dark clouds being dispersed, so sate ye there, so the despair is lifting. And woven to a network in her hair were planets, times, and signs, the while the king with his glad eyes was her beleaguering, meaning that she was feeding the king. Jung's commentary is, these melting processes all express a relativization of the dominance of consciousness prevailing in a given age. For those who identify with the dominance or are absolutely dependent on them, the melting process appears as hostile, as a hostile, destructive attack, which should be resisted with all powers. Others for whom that dominance no longer mean what they purport to be, sees the melting as a longed for regeneration and enrichment of a system of ideas that has lost its vitality and freshness and is already obsolete. So that a value system has been reborn, and that's what the deepest sense of this Jungian work is about. Thus he of all triumphant kings is chief of bodies sick, the only grand relief, such a reformist of defects that he is worshipped both by king and commonality. To princes, priests, heals an ornament, the sick and needy sort he doth content. What man is there, this potion will not bless, as banishes all thought of neediness. Well, just compare that with the allegory we did before. What a great difference. That there has been a fundamental shift in the king, who guides with restraint and justice, where the other one was just getting strong again.
And this is for everyone, not just himself.
And for everyone, not just himself. The critical phase, as we've seen, is that despair and death. The king and queen unite, and then they die. And we'll see then in other examples how this rebirth fashions itself. Let's do the interpretation of the king, and then I think we've done a morning's work. We can talk until noon. This afternoon we'll pick up Adam and Eve. We have one Adam text, and then we'll talk about the three stages of union, which brings us back to synchronicity. Yes?
From the golden cup image.
Yeah.
That was the sins of the world,
you said. Well, in the book of Revelations, it said she's got the sins of the world, the filth, forgetting something.
Abominations.
Filth and abominations of their fornication.
Mm-hmm. And then right after that, it was about emotions.
Right.
And
what's the link?
Yeah. I don't think you're saying they're the same, but
Well, the abominable and filthy feeling emotions are what's in the cup.
Okay, so from the collector's standpoint, it's called sin, but from the essence is the emotion.
Is what we might even feel as sinful emotions. But the fact that they show up in a golden cup is a hint to us not to judge them morally, but to see them as the pathway to a higher value.
Embrace them, right? To look at them, embrace whatever aspect they want.
Well, look at what the church is doing. There was just something on TV about them training, or maybe the Mormons, the men not to have homosexual feelings. So
yeah, that would be an example of the filth in the cup.
Yeah, and all they do is shut them off. The men don't turn to women because they don't have those, so they just, you know, to keep their faith, they put them away and say, I won't have them.
And what the image shows is that those things are of the highest value.
Well, Freud's idea of morality was that we're looking at the truth as the truth. And we're not judging people's sin, like in the popular sense of morality, but philosophically, we're looking at the morality of what's in the cup is what's the truth within these emotions.
Same thing.
The truth of the love, the longing.
Absolutely. Same thing.
The anger.
Same thing. Same thing.
Because, or like what you were talking about in the wisdom of the physical, because the emotions are the body speaking.
Same thing. And just because they seem antisocial, or they seem wrong, or they seem problematic, or they seem to destroy your pride, don't destroy your experience of them. Because they are part of the path to the rebirth of the king. Autoeroticism or lust for a neighbor or God knows what.
Or even vulnerability. Lots of times for men...
Or vulnerability?
You know, they're to maintain their male pride, they can't allow themselves to feel any vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Next section. I think we've done a lot of this, but let's just hear Jung's words for it. I've tried to pick out the most concise paragraphs where he now tries to sum up the meaning of what we've just done. If neurotic symptoms appear, then the attitude of consciousness, its ruling idea is contradicted. That's what we've said. If it doesn't make sense, holler. I think we've already done this, but I'm just trying to give you a chance to hear him say it. And in the unconscious, it should be there, that's a typo. In the unconscious, there is a stirring up of those archetypes that were most suppressed by the conscious attitude. That would be all the things that come up to destroy the king, all those bludgeonings of the king. The therapist then has no other course than to confront the ego with its adversary and thus initiate the melting and recasting process. The confrontation is expressed in the alchemical myth of the king as the collision of the masculine spirit, father world, ruled over by King Sol, son, in other words, with the feminine thonic mother world symbolized by the aqua permanens. We really didn't get into the aqua permanens. It's just another word for the water that dissolves. That's a typo too, by the way. It should be permanens, not a T. Or by the chaos. The illegitimate aspect of this relationship appears as incest, we've already said that, which results in the pregnancy of the mother, other there being the unconscious. If the ego does not interfere with its irritating rationality, the opposite, just because they are in conflict, will gradually draw together. In the end, this must lead to some kind of union, even though the union consists at first in an open conflict, and often remains so for a long time. It is a struggle that cannot be abolished by rational means. The only certain thing is that both parties will be changed. What the product of the union will be, it is impossible, underline impossible, to imagine. That is the creative aspect of the unconscious. We know how often in the course of history consciousness has subjected its highest and most central ideas to drastic revision and correction, but we know little or nothing about the archetypal process of change. And I put that in there just so you know that the process we've been talking about goes on in the individual. But to the extent that we are sharing a common value system, that individual change is paralleled by a change in the general value system. But in specific instances, it is the individual who leads the way.
And this process is something the person has to, like a stew, be in for that time, you know?
I'd say months to a year or two. This is how long one cycle takes. Interestingly, it's often 9 months. Yeah, it's weird. People will go down, and 9 months they'll dream that they're giving birth.
Then there's what to do with the baby, you know?
Well, that's the changes that occur have to translate, the changes in value system that occur have to translate into a change of behavior. And very often, you're given that new king is the values required for some engagement with your society. So you come back out in the world with something very specific to do. It's almost like you get an assignment.
Mm-hmm. And people don't. And they go back into kind of despair and depression.
I think if you have gone through a long process and you don't, there is hell to pay. The body falls apart. Mm-hmm. This dream, did you notice the animals were getting unwieldy big? That's a precancerous dream, I think. If that goes on unchecked, the body just manifests a wild growth rather than a human growth. Mm-hmm. I hate to say things like that in public, but that's sometimes the case. Mm-hmm. You see this out of control nature in precancerous dreams. Mm-hmm. Where there's cancerous growth rather than psychological growth. Now I guess it's more accepted than it was even 25 years ago probably. But a conscious attitude that renounces its ego-bound intentions, not in imagination, speaking of your question, not in imagination only, but in truth, and submits to the supra-personal decrees of fate, can claim to be serving a king. So what we're trying to do is to discover this new value system and then serve it. And that is the resolution of egocentricity, because you're no longer just doing what you want. You're serving values which you have discovered within yourself. And you can see how when the values come up in this deeper recipe, they are not just about your life, they're about the society also. For only if you feel yourself on the right road when the conflicts of duty seem to have resolved themselves, and you have become the victim of a decision made over your head, I love that word, or in defiance of the heart. For you only feel yourself on the right road when the conflicts of duty seem to have resolved themselves, and you have become the victim of a decision made over your head, or in defiance of the heart. For this we can see the numinous power of the self, which can hardly be experienced in any other way. For this reason, the experience of the self is always a defeat for the ego. Probably Jung's most famous sentence. See, I brought along that dream of the child, and I brought along a couple others of kings too. Let's see. This is more typically the way the king theme shows up. This next dream, for us. This is from Edinger's Anatomy of the Psyche, page 20. The Reverend X had died. See, it's a religious authority figure. That's the king. So that Reverend X would represent the dreamer's religious values as personified by this individual. Reverend X had died. His body was to be cremated, see the dissolution. And there was some question as to who would get the gold that would be left over after his body was burned. That would be the new king. I saw the liquid gold, very dark in color, and held some dark stuff, perhaps ashes that were black. My first thought about the gold was negative, a feeling of repugnance. Then it occurred to me that it must have been something very special, and that the gold was sort of his essence, or what he left behind of value. That's a more typical king dream than king or queen. He cites Francis Wick's publishing a dream, where it is a dream of the king. And you can see how the king starts out like our first king, but then watch what happens. The old king, whose cruelty is completely irrational, must be killed with his own sword, a bent and rusty blade. Mm. See the absence of clarity in the old value system. And it's mean. When this is done, a flame springs up from the lifeless body, rebirth out of the death. As the old king is consumed to ashes, a gleaming sword appears in the center of the flame. Questions?
Can you give some examples of what kind of surprising things people end up with? In other words, how does their life change from where they started? You know, what kind of surprises actually happens to people?
A new relationship, a job possibility that was never thought to be possible, writing a book that never thought was possible, a new sense of honesty and sharing in a relationship, a new confidence, sometimes it sounds very small. I was talking to one person who went through this and said to me, you know, I went to my high school reunion. It's a woman in her 50s. I went to my high school reunion and somebody asked me my name, and I said my name, and the first time in my life I wasn't ashamed to say it. It's anywhere from apparently small to huge life changes.
But it's usually a change.
Pardon me?
A change.
A change.
So something that you really haven't looked for or haven't expected.
Or never thought you would get. Or could not have imagined.
So it wasn't, it's basically not what you normally would have gone in a certain method. You using your thinking of something was not exactly what you wanted to do. You want to go beyond thinking.
Absolutely.
More for feeling, more for something that happened, something that came about.
Exactly. And you were headed that way and you veered away from it. I would stress that it's something that you could not have planned. With all your best resources, you could not have come up with that decision. And while Jung is working this way, he feels that ultimately the unconscious is the one that comes up with the best alternative. As we'll see, very often it is linked up with the synchronicity. That the synchronicity presents an opportunity at the moment you are ready for it, and the healing of inside and outside occur together. We'll get there this afternoon.
Say again.
There's an inner healing, and there's a readiness, let's say, for the right relationship, the right job, the right possibility, and that possibility then shows up in reality at the moment you need it. So it's not just inner. It's inner and outer. But as I say, I'm trying to break this up into small bits of like Chinese food. And then we'll try to put the whole piece together.
You talked about the transformation or change. And you talked about that we have the creative element.
Yes. Well, and it's
more about that
the possibility that occurs is something you would have never envisioned. I think it's both. I think sometimes it is people going through this personal change will spontaneously produce a work of art that is creative at the same time.
Original.
They couldn't have done and they couldn't have conceived of.
Population of people. creative.
No, I don't think so. The only thing, it doesn't apply to a psychopath. Doesn't apply to psychopaths.
They have no
empathy. Right. Well, strangely, they have no empathy for themselves. And they don't have the integrity to keep the vessel closed.
So a psychopath would take these images that are meant for creativity and try and act them out again.
Or see how much money they could make off of them, or when there are difficult emotions that come up. I've had people, you know, walk out of my office and slander me all over town because of some misunderstanding, rather than come back and talk about it, and then that completely destroys the process.
How is it going
to
apply people who really do molest children, or really do kill people?
Yeah.
They're taking something that was meant for their health and their wholeness, and they're trying to act it out.
Literally. And not see it metaphorically.
So, yeah. So they don't have a sufficiently large enough ego to contain and manage? Because you said that the ego has to...
I think that must be it, yeah.
And if there's not enough anger in the conscious to deal with the stuff coming from the unconscious, that there's no governor there.
No,
reality.
The way you could say there is no king.
Yeah.
It's scary. It's scary.
Okay.
And you know, psychopaths are not only in prison, there are many highly trained professionals who have absolutely no conscience.
That's the negative unconscious possessiveness.
That'd be a way to look at it, yes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they have no way to.
There's no fulcrum.
Yeah, there's nothing.
There's no value system.
There's no value system.
Yeah. Moderate.
Yeah. But you read about, you know, Jung psychologists good for highly educated. I work with very uneducated, I mean, high school educated, yes, probably, because you've got to write down your dreams. But, no. I don't buy that.
I know. I mean, everyone has the potential. And
yeah.
Creative, a lot of people have it suppressed or,
yeah.
You know, they're yelled at.
Right.
Certain ways of, you know, they're not
even confident. Right. Yeah. But you see, what we're trying to do then is build a value system that supports their confidence. Like, that king was the beginning of that little girl's confidence in her creativity. So we would see beneath these concepts that we hear in psych today, confidence and narcissism, we would see an issue with values transformation.
I think that point is interesting, that as she grows up and experiences our culture, she could veer off for a period of
yeah.
time. And get caught in that, but then what it shows is there's hope that she can.
I don't think the girl will.
Doesn't sound like
no way.
But I do think that.
That is certainly the pressure. You get into the social milieu, you realize you get more attention, more sex, more friends if you are somebody other than you really are.
Well, and it's how you value yourself in our culture.
That's by these external standards.
That, yeah. was her guiding dream. I mean, I had a dream at the age of 5 that has been the guiding dream of my life, and it was a much more damaged dream, and I've only now recently recovered pieces of what was lost when I was 5. It's now been in the process of being recovered, and it's taken all of this time to do it. But that dream has been, I mean, I knew at the time that I had it that it was significant. And so it's clear that this child clearly knows that as well.
Yeah.
Gary, would you say that the end product then does take into consideration all the talents and gifts of the individual, or that they would be given something else, or does it? Is that one of the reasons you go back and do some of the reductive work is to identify those kinds of things.
Yes, what's been lost,
mm-hmm.
and the attitude that you've learned to lose them.
And then it mixes them all together and creates something new that you could not even have imagined out of those things.
Yeah, okay. Or it's more like that part you could never have imagined was already there,
okay.
And you've gotten piece and piece and piece of it, and it doesn't mix them together, it it's the hole into which all the other pieces fit.
It's like taking off the blinders and you kind of see it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Questions? I think we're kind of on schedule. It's a happy thought. We will do Adam and Eve, which is not that difficult. And then we'll do the three stages of the Kenyentio, in which we'll see the final stage, as Jung works with it, is the synchronicity. That will be this afternoon's agenda. So we'll have gone different aspects of the masculine and feminine. Now we're on king and queen. Now we go to Adam and Eve. So have a lunch, and we'll start promptly at 1:00.